Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Anna, joined by my book besties, Kim and Christina. And together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi, book besties. Welcome back to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive into the series that started it all. We are so excited to be here discussing A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas. Woo! And just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes so we can really take our time with this incredible story. But before we give our official spoiler warning, we have a few announcements. Christina.
Yes, it is a very exciting month over on Patreon. Quick reminder of what we've got going on over there. In our SJM series, this month we are covering the question, is Gwen a light singer? We are deep diving that theory this month. Also, for both tiers, our Bridgerton Season 4 Part 2 video episode. We will also be bringing you chapter chats for Conform by Arielle Sullivan. Oh my gosh, we had so much fun reading this book. It is fun. It is amazing. It is dystopian perfection. The love triangle. Oh my God, we had the best time reading this and we can't wait to bring you chapter chats on it. So be sure to check those out. And if you haven't already read Conform, buddy read it with us along with our chapter chats.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Kim will be bringing us a recent 5-star reads written review. We have so much fun stuff going on over on Patreon and all of our back catalog available as well. So come join the family and the party over at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. Okay, Kim, let's do some shout outs.
Yes, let's do. So one of the many benefits of what being one of our tier two book bitches is that you get a special shout out in one of our episodes. So in this episode, we are shouting out Rachel W., Morrison Lynn, and Chandler Lucas. Thank you guys so much for supporting
Yay!
Us.
Thank you guys.
We love you.
Thank you. We so appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Listeners, consider this your official spoiler warning for the entire ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. Also, at the end of this episode, we will have our mastermind section where we will take a look at all of Sarah's series as a whole and draw upon parallels and theorize. But don't you worry, that's at the very end of the episode and we will give an additional spoiler warning before diving in. So without further ado, let's get back to Prithian with Nesta.
Yes.
And just a reminder, we left off last week with a creepy little field trip to the Bog of Orid where Nesta fights off a Kelpie. We also talked about found family and did a little mental health check-in. So today, we're actually going to do a little mate check-in with Nesta and Cassian.
Oh! Ooh! Yes. Oh, God.
So by the time that we have entered the middle portion of this book, Nesta is well into her training. She is becoming closer to Emery and Gwyn. She's, by all intents and purposes, doing pretty well for Nesta.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Really.
Yes.
Leaps and bounds.
Right.
Yes.
And I feel like that translates into how she and Cassian behave towards one another. They, you know, still have their playful banter, but there's also a sense of ease between them. Nesta's walls aren't constantly up. She's able to let Cassian in more. They have conversations about her family, about dynamics in which she grew up. Cassian shares more about his upbringing in the Illyrian war camps. There's just a natural give and take that we didn't see in the first half of the book. And probably what has the most to do with this are these two horn dogs finally, finally act upon their built-up sexual tension. But before we get to those spicy scenes, we want to share a couple of our favorite quotes and moments from the first half of this book.
Okay, fine. Yes. We can wait on the sex. Fine.
We can wait.
Guys, fine.
It's a little edging, you know? Just gotta
Anna,
we'll get there.
Damn it.
Anna and the edge.
Anna always takes an opportunity to bring that up.
We'll get there.
God. Okay.
We'll get there. It's anticipation.
All right. So this quote I love. It's Cassian and he's talking to Nesta. She's giving him that withering look that only Nesta can give that looks like, you know, she could just flay armies with one single look. And he says, "The first time I saw that look on your face, you were still human. Still human, and I nearly went to my knees before you." His breath caressed the shell of her ear, and she couldn't stop her eyes from fluttering shut. His smile brushed against her temple. Your power is a song and one I've waited a very, very long time to hear, Nesta.
Oh, my God, mates. It's so good.
Power is a song.
Also, I've waited very, very long time to hear, Nesta.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, just reinforcing this idea that the mating bond is strong with these two.
Yes. And I love the, like, power is a song and Nesta loves music.
Yes.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And I love him talking about how when he saw that look on her face when she was still human, he almost went to his knees before her. It's just so beautiful.
It is.
I love it.
Yeah.
So another really sweet moment between them is just showcasing how they're able to be a little bit more vulnerable with each other. And it's actually at the dining room table scene, which we'll get to in a little bit. But it's before the sexy times happen. And Cassian has just gotten back from the Spring Court. And Nesta notes that he is not himself, that he seems depressed, he seems withdrawn. And she pries, as she pushes him to, like, talk about it. And what he says is, Eris and his twisted word games and politics are an enemy I don't know how to handle. Every time I meet with him, I feel like he's got the upper hand. Like, I can only catch up to him and he sees through my every fumbling attempt at being clever. Maybe that makes me a stupid brute after all. And it says true sorrow filled his face and enough self-loathing that Nesta rose from her seat. And then she walks towards him.
Cassian!
I know.
But it's this beautiful moment between the two of them because we have seen him go to the Spring Court and meet with Eris. And every time he meets with him, he has his guard up. He has his walls up. He's not Nesta and how Nesta fights battles, but there's that sense of self-doubt, that insecurity that he is not enough.
Yeah.
But he opens up to Nesta in this moment. And it's almost like it's a test. Like, he's like, what are you going to say? Are you going to bite my head off? Are you going to roll your eyes? And she doesn't. She walks over to him and, well, she sits in his lap. he does question the motives and she's like, shut up. Like, just
let me go down on you, please. God,
please. I do want to say, though, there is something that I picked up more this reread than I had in previous rereads, and that's the miscommunication between the two of them in regards to where they stand with sex.
Oh, God.
And, like, their relationship. Maybe I just ignored it, or I don't know, but it was so big and prominent in this book.
Yes.
The amount of times that she says just sex and he's like, okay, just sex. But then they both do it. She wants him to stay. He doesn't offer to stay. He wants to stay, but she doesn't ask him to stay. Like, it's both of them refusing to own up to
for
it.
For sure.
I wish she would want me to cuddle. I wish he would cuddle.
Yeah.
It's like, somebody say something for the love of God.
It's like that last vulnerability line they're not willing to cross until we'll get to it in later episodes.
They don't want to be the first one to cross
it. Exactly. Yeah. Because it's a big to be turned down in that way.
Yeah.
Well, and they already feel like shame, like they're not good enough. Mm-hmm. And they've broken so many barriers with each other. But I think this was the barrier that they were like, I can't have him or her hurt me in this way because that's too much.
Right.
Right.
And I think for Cassian, there's a lot of weight to accepting that if he says this isn't just sex, what he's saying is they're mates because that's what their sex is.
Yes.
That's what their emotion and their
their
connection is. And she's not ready for that, clearly. And
no.
Yeah. And he will take that as she's against him, not against the mating bond.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Absolutely.
But I do love this little, it felt so high school. But it's like later in the book, it's like, you know, around page 430 or something. And she says, was the sex not good for you? And he's like, well, why would you ask that? And Nesta's throat bobbed. She was, fuck, was she really that unsure of him? This is Cassian's POV. And she's like, well, you left quickly and didn't seek me out again. And I just worried you didn't enjoy it as much as I did. And it's so hot. His hands braced on either side of her and he leaned in to whisper in her ear, breathing in her scent. I enjoyed myself too much. I've thought about it for days and days.
Yes!
Yeah, you
and
did.
She's like, okay.
Okay.
Okay, I just wanted to check. Okay.
Honestly, I'm very happy this interaction happened.
Yeah.
The growth for Nesta here to actually say that is big. Also, it needed to be said. And it's you know, Cassian, we love him, but sometimes he's just such a guy.
He's such a dum-dum sometimes.
And it's like, why would she not take that as you didn't enjoy it? You left and then you didn't come back for days.
Right. Like, truly.
What was she supposed to think?
All right.
Okay, so speaking of the sexy times.
Yes.
Let's chat about some of our favorite spicy scenes in this book.
God, there's so many.
I do have to say, I remember us all reading this for the first time and I was a little bit ahead of you guys and I was like, guys, Sarah is really dialing up the spice in this book. Like, wow.
it really felt like a different type of book.
Yeah.
Wow. Then the first three
didn't
hate it.
Felt like a shift.
And I was into it. I was like, okay, Sarah.
On board.
Okay, so obviously the scene where they're outside the staircase and Nesta has these insane dry humping skills because she's making this 500-plus-year-old Illyrian warrior come in his pants in like 30 seconds. I was like,
oh God.
Wow, Nesta, that is some skills.
Damn.
Right there.
Listen, that middle school grinding.
That really paid off.
Yeah. She was freak dancing at dances, for sure.
She was freak dancing to Usher in the middle school gym, for sure.
Oh, God.
Yes. I love she, like, hops off of him, and she's, like, a bit quick off the mark.
Oh, my God. And then in that moment, you're like, Nesta, oh, my God.
Yeah, at first I was like, this is so mean. Oh, my God. But now...
Now that you, like, know them, you're just like, God damn, they get off on this shit. Like, they...
Oh, they love it. Yeah, they love it. But then... Cassian has to return the favor because he's like, oh, no, no, this cannot stand. We cannot be having this.
No.
So he literally says to Asriel, turn a blind eye, chaperone. Asriel's like, God damn it.
I'm obsessed with this interaction.
You just see Asriel being like, oh, God, I'm just trying to drink my coffee. Like,
okay. I hate this.
Why do I have to be the chaperone?
Yeah. He's like mind speaking to Reese, like, yeah, thanks a lot.
This is thanks sucks. A lot.
I can't wait for Asriel to return the favor.
Yes. Oh my God, give it to us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sorry, keep going.
So Cassian goes into Nesta's room and she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm here to return the favor, basically. Because he's like, this opinion of me cannot stand. Like, we must fix this.
I am a giver.
I have a reputation to uphold.
That's right, exactly. So it says, his eyes dipped again, and when he saw her nipples hard against the silk of her nightgown.
Laughter.
I have kids. It's fine. Guys, I've been watching Heated Rivalry. I'm really riled up. There's a lot going on.
That'll do it.
His entire being seemed to focus on it, on her. All 500 years of being a trained warrior, an apex predator, all of it narrowing on her. I love that. I did forget that Sarah writes that Cassian has purring sounds coming out of his chest.
I hate it. I hate that.
I don't like that. I'm just going to
say I don't know what that
it.
Means.
I don't like it. It's like a rumbling.
It's like, yeah, but it's not. It's a purring. And I'm like, can you?
Like, I can't use growling again. This quote is both hilarious and incredible. And it says, watching Nesta climax had been as close to a religious experience as Cassian had ever had.
Take me to church, Cassian.
Take me to church, Daddy. Oh, my God.
I love this line. It's so well done. I love
it's
it.
So good.
I love that. But you know what we love even more is the dining table scene.
Oh, let's go to the dining table.
Let's go to the dining table.
So Nesta, like, very much takes charge in this scene. And she seductively walks up to Cassian. He's sitting there at the table. And then she asks him how he likes it. She says, quote, how do you like it? Gentle. He shakes his head. And she runs her nails along him. And he freaks out in a good way, okay? And then she just goes, oh, I see.
I see. Of course he doesn't like it, gentle. It's Cassian.
It's Cassian.
And Nesta. They want to attack each other.
But the best part of this dining table scene, though, is Asriel shows up.
Yep.
Asriel, who is, let's remember, Spymaster. This whole thing is he's undetectable.
Yep.
And Cassian notes a warning from someone who knew how to remain silent.
I just love that he's like, stop.
Clomp, clomp, clomp.
Stop. Knock, knock. Shoot, I tripped over myself. You know how clumsy I am, you guys. So sorry about that.
Hysterical.
Okay, but this quote is the best thing ever.
Okay. Asriel says, don't show your hand all at once, Cass. Save something for later. Busybody. As responds, you let her suck your cock in the middle of the dining room at a table I am currently using to eat my dinner. I'd say that entitles me to an opinion. Cassian laughs, and then he just says, fair enough.
Fair.
I'm obsessed with this.
I love it so much.
And honestly, Asriel has a point. You know what I mean?
He does.
Yes.
All right. Now, Anna, take us to church. Here's our favorite scene.
Guys,
take us, Anna.
This, like, realigned my atoms when I read
uh-huh.
this.
Yep. First time I read this book, this was the only thing I remembered.
This is the headboard scene. And let me tell you something. Sarah said, hold my beer. You don't know what's coming.
You don't know
what I'm capable of.
That's right. Honestly, I was like, damn, girl, okay.
Let me tell you, we were in the middle of a snowstorm in Houston. Power was out for almost a week, and we had to find ways to keep warm. And I read this book, and I was like, Benjamin?
Benjamin, to the bedroom. Let's go.
Oh, my God. We had to find ways to keep warm.
It was the Oregon Trail.
It was the Oregon Trail.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So let's set the scene. Cassie and Nesta. They're in a room.
Yeah, they are.
Listen, the dining room.
The sky.
Listen, there's lots of places.
Bedroom. They're in a bedroom.
But Nesta is like, you can't touch me. You have to just watch.
Yeah.
And so it is a edging for Cassian.
It is.
And she's like touching herself. He's like, show me what you do when you're in bed. We are.
Yeah.
It's getting hot.
Yeah.
And then she's like, unleash. Like, let's go. You can touch me now.
Love it.
They go at it. We're going in for round two. He flips her around. And he says, get on your hands and knees, he ordered, his voice so low she could barely understand him. Nesta did as he bade, baring herself. He snarled in satisfaction. Beautiful. She whimpered a bit because beneath the praise, pure lust simmered. He growled, put your hands on the headboard. Literally, he said that. I was like, new kink unlocked. Tell me what to do.
Hands are going on the headboard.
Lead me when I'm in the mood to be led.
And we are in the mood.
This after get on your hands and knees, like, my good God.
This is when I was like, I think I like that.
I am feeling, what is this feeling?
What is this feeling? So sudden and new. So then Cassian rose behind her, gripping her hips. He knocked a knee against each of her own, spreading her legs wider. Callous fingertips brushed down the length of her spine over the tattoo there, the ink binding them. He leaned in to whisper in her ear, hold on tight.
Spider monkey.
Kimberlyn, this is a sexy moment.
I cannot hear the phrase hold on tight without hearing spider monkey. Okay, blame Robert Pattinson.
Hold on tight, spider monkey.
Damn it, Kim.
I'm sorry, but I had to do it. It's in my brain, so now it's in your brain.
Why, thank you.
Oh, that headboard scene just really changed the fandom. Let me tell you. It really did.
It actually really did. And we thank Sarah for that.
We do.
We really do.
It's up there with the Hewn City and Feyre grinding on Pleasant.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that scene if it were an adult book. Yeah.
Oh, the possibilities are endless.
I want to know what that version
would
be.
I would like to read it, please.
Same.
Sarah?
Same. Okay, so moving on. We're going to jump now into one of the harder parts of the book.
Plummet straight down.
Yeah, no good transition.
No, not really. So Nesta telling Feyre about the baby and the hike. So before we get there, though, we do have some information that the blacksmith delivers to Rhysand and the Inner Circle. And this is kind of the catalyst for what's to come. Now, remember, Cassian had brought Nesta to a blacksmith so she could understand all that went into crafting the weapons that she would then start training with. And after watching for a while, Nesta was allowed to try hammering the metal herself. She worked on three items specifically, a short sword, a blade, and a great sword. How are they different? I don't know. I don't care. Doesn't matter.
I don't know. Those all sound the same to me, but sure.
They're all pointy. They all kill you.
They're stabby things.
Stabby things. Okay. Well, it turns out that because Nesta is, quote, made, she accidentally imbued those three items with some of her magic. The blacksmith freaks out, returns the items to Rhysand, saying they are, quote, cursed. Now, everyone is trying to decide what to do with them, so let's quickly run through what we know about made items based on the knowledge shared in this book. So, the only known made items so far that we've discussed are the trove, which we already discussed in an earlier episode, but also swords. There are Gwydion and its sister sword, Truth Teller, which is owned by Azrael. Gwydion, though, has been missing for 15,000 years. Pin that for Mastermind. Mm-hmm. Narbin was another made sword, which, according to Amarin, Amarantha found and destroyed while Rhysand was under the mountain. Amarin says that Amarantha chucked it into the sea.
Yep.
Now, how that would possibly destroy a made sword, I don't know.
Narvin's coming back, friends.
Show me the body.
Show me the body. Show me the sword. You can't. It's alive.
So, two important distinctions between the trove and the made swords. The trove was forged by the cauldron itself, whereas Truth Teller and the other swords were created when a high priestess named Oleana dipped them into the cauldron during their forging. Now, Nesta, because she stole some of the cauldron's powers, is technically made herself, hence why she was able to imbue the swords with magic, and they are now similar to the swords that were created thousands of years ago. This is just some receipts. Nesta created a new magic sword. Yes, Amarin said. Only the great powers could do that. Gwydion was given its powers when the high priestess, Oleana, dipped it into the cauldron during its crafting. And then she follows up with, the dread trove was forged by the cauldron. Nesta possesses the cauldron's powers, so anything she crafts and imbues with her power becomes a new trove. At this point, I wouldn't so much as eat a piece of bread if she toasted it.
Amarin.
Amarin.
You're being dramatic.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
That's unnecessary. Like, she can't control any of this. No.
And this is clearly ACOTAR Six Watch, right? We are setting things up, I think, with some of these swords.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that she made a new trove, this is ridiculously
important. Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Okay, so here we go. Let's get to Cassian telling Nesta. So the way this whole emergency meeting of the Inner Circle wraps up is that Amarin and Rhysand believe Nesta should not be informed about this newfound ability to her power. Azriel and Cassian strongly disagree, and Feyre will be the deciding vote. And thankfully, she votes in favor of telling her sister.
Note how Feyre immediately, without question, notes that she must vote yes, that her sister should know something about her own self and her own magic and her own body without thinking.
Oh, wow.
Rhysand.
Touche.
Yeah.
Touche. That should have been a note to Rhysand to be like, right.
So you would want to know.
So you would want to know if the tables were turned.
This is the moment when Rhys should have been like, so this got away from me.
Regrets were made.
I've let this go downhill too far. We need to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Good point, Christina. Great point. So Cassian is tasked with telling Nesta, which at the time I'm sure made sense. I'm sure it did. Mm-hmm. However, Cassian does not do a good job, okay? Listen, we love him.
We love him.
Deeply.
But he's a little bit of a dum-dum in this situation, okay? So Cassian thinks he's being all sneaky, and he brings up blades during training. And he's like, so like Nesta, if like you were to have a sword, and I'm not saying you do or that you could make one, what would you name it? What would you name your sword?
What would you do?
He like keeps bringing it up in a way that's so obvious. And Nesta is not stupid. Nesta's very smart. So she immediately picks up on the fact that Cassian is hiding something. And like her guard's already up and she's like, what's going on? And then he's being weird and it's so bad. So he tells her the whole situation. And he's like, so we argued about whether to tell you, but we took a vote and it went in your favor because we trust you. I just hadn't gotten a chance to bring it up yet. And Nesta's like, oh, so there was a possibility you wouldn't even tell me? You all sat around and judged me, and then you voted. And it says something deep in her chest cracked to know that every horrible thing about her had been analyzed.
God.
We have made it so far.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
We were almost to the top.
We just gonna die.
And then it's like she just kicks off the side of it. Just obviously reinforcing all of the negative thoughts that Nesta already feels, that everyone hates her, because that's what Cassian said. No one trusts her, and that she's unworthy of being part of the group. She already feels like an outsider. She already like is looking through the window of this inner circle and feeling like she doesn't belong. Yeah. And then Cassian's like, oh, don't worry, we voted. And she's like,
It went in your favor, though. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah, because we trust you.
You should be happy.
No. That's not the way this works.
No, it's so, he handles it so terribly.
Yeah.
So at this point, she literally blacks out.
Yeah.
She goes to the stairs and she starts her descent. And of course, today is the day that she's finally able to accomplish getting to the bottom. What a fun coincidence that is.
Yes.
Fueled by rage.
Here's what it says. She didn't count the stairs, didn't feel her legs moving. There was only the roaring of her blood and the roaring in her head and the crack down the center of her chest. No amount of mind stilling could calm it, smother it. The ground grew nearer. She couldn't think around her fury, that pain, couldn't think, only move. The stairwell turned warmer, farther away from the cold wind above. Amarin had entirely given up on her. The debate about sending her up here had been different. Nesta knew that debate had been out of a desire to help her. She could acknowledge that now. This debate had been out of hatred and fear of her.
Yeah.
Oh, God. What a parallel in that last sentence. She could acknowledge that the first time was to help her. Yeah. That's huge growth. But this is not that. And it just sends her right back to rock bottom. It's almost like how I was saying last week, how Rhys going into this book from Frost and Starlight, he was like, something bad's going to happen. And then it happened. He's like, I fucking knew it. I knew it. Yep. I knew it. Like, I think that's where she is. She's like, yep.
Oh, She's like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Yeah.
Well,
and here we are.
And we've come so far. And then to have this, like you said, like this growth moment of she can acknowledge this. And then this idea, though, that like everyone still hates her. And you see her with Emery and Gwyn, and you see how far she's coming. And she has made such great strides. And she's like, why is it not enough? Like, you could see her in her head going like, I'm trying. Like, why? I'm doing X. I'm doing Y. I can't get, like, why is nobody seeing this? And it's a self-involved viewpoint of it. But you can understand her being like, fuck, this hurts. Like, I can't. I'm damned if I do. I'm damned if I don't. I can't win. I just, like, give me something. And also, I think it hurts that it's Amarin.
I think it's that it's Amarin. Reese is like, she's like, well, yeah, obviously. Like, I wasn't sure. going to say that he should vote for me.
Yeah.
But it's Amarin that really hurts her.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
she's going to go confront Amarin because that is who she's really pissed about. Okay. Yeah. So she barges into Amarin's apartment. And honestly, this conversation and confrontation between them is probably much needed, but it is handled horribly. Amarin is horrible to Nesta. Nesta says, "You were my friend." Amarin's teeth flashed. "Was I? I don't think you know what that word means."
Oh, Amarin, that's so mean. And that especially cuts Nesta because she's like, no, I have friends now. And then she's like, you don't know what that means. She's like, oh, wait, so now I don't. Gwen and Amarin, maybe I don't know what it means. And it's just like, yeah. It's so sad.
You can just see how she's already blacking out. Everyone's mm-hmm. talking about me. Everyone hates me, reinforcing all my negative thoughts. And then she gets there and Amarin's like, yeah, no, I don't think you know what that means. It's like, cool, I'm just going to plummet.
Like, Amarin is so awful to her. And I don't, again, I don't understand what we're doing.
You know, it's kind of frustrating. It's like the Rhysand thing. It's like, I understand she's a tiny ancient one. I understand that she has in the past books been snarky and honestly can be cutting like Nesta. I'm not saying that we have not seen signs of that. I think the difference is it was Feyre's POV. Feyre loves Amarin. And I think, but you can't ignore the way that she calls Cassian a dog. She says
that.
At one point, like, you be careful when you fuck her. Like, you don't, like, she says something really weird about, like, their sex life at one point during the blacksmith conversation. Mm-hmm. It's just weird. And it's like, you're not helping. I understand you're hurt, Amarin. Go work out your own shit. Maybe you need to go train.
Yeah, you're a trillion years old. You should be, like,
able to handle the fact that she hurt your feelings. Like, okay.
Agreed. I have this note where I'm like, okay, between Amarin and Rhysand, I don't know what Sarah was hoping to accomplish here. Mm-hmm, and it seems like she dialed up the most negative aspects of Rhysand and Amarin in this book specifically.
Yeah.
And it was honestly so unpleasant as the reader. Yeah. And I don't understand. I'm like, Sarah, you have worked so hard to have these characters. We go on this journey with them. We grow to know them mm-hmm. and love them and care for them. And then it's like she takes them and is just like, well, fuck all that. Like, why?
And it would be one thing if we're in Nesta's head and she is taking their words to mean something else, or she's creating these narratives. Because, fine, we're in Nesta's head. That's part of her journey, how she sees these people. But no, we're getting on page Amarin saying specific words that are just too mean. They just don't make sense contextually.
Agreed.
You know?
Well, it's in Cassian's POV, too. So, like, it's not, you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like,
exactly.
It's Cassian, who Amarin has been a family with for... hundreds of years. So she's being awful to him too. And so I'm like, Sarah, I don't know what we're doing.
It doesn't sit well. I don't like it. But it sets us up.
Yeah. So we have this terrible conversation. Amarin is such a bitch. And Feyre shows up because everyone's like, sound the alarms. Nesta's made it down the stairs. The beast has been unleashed. Everybody figure out where Nesta is. And Feyre runs in.
Here we go. Oh my God. Okay. So I'm just going to read these quotes because this scene is so well written. And okay. Nesta didn't care. Couldn't think about the roaring. Have any of them told you, their respected High Lord, that the babe in your womb will kill you? Amarin barked, shut your mouth. But her order was confirmation enough. Face paling, Feyre whispered, what do you mean? The wings, Nesta seethed. The boy's Illyrian wings will get stuck in your fey body during the labor and it will kill you both.
So aggressive. Okay.
Feyre then to this is crying and is like, but what do you mean? I don't, I saw the bone carver as the baby and like, what? I don't understand how that works. And Nesta just goes, I don't know, but I do know that your mate ordered everyone not to inform you of the truth. She turned to Amarin. Did you all vote on that too? Did you talk about her, judge her, and deem her unworthy of the truth? What was your vote, Amarin, to let Feyre die in ignorance? Before Amarin could reply, Nesta turned back to her sister. Didn't you question why your precious, perfect Rhysand has been a moody bastard for weeks? Because he knows you will die. He knows, and yet he still didn't tell you. It keeps going. Okay, then Feyre's crying, and she's like, Rhys knew. Tears spilled down Feyre's cheeks, smearing the paint spider there, but the threat to our lives. She peered down at herself at the tattooed hand cradling her abdomen, and Nesta knew that she had not once in her life been loved by her mother as much as Feyre already loved the boy growing inside her. It broke something in Nesta, broke that rage, that roaring, seeing those tears begin to fall, the fear crumpling Feyre's paint-smeared face. She had gone too far. Oh, gods, she'd gone too far. This is so hard to read. And it is so aggressive. It is the wolf yeah. in that cage shredding
it is.
Her opponent apart. It is so mean and cunning yeah. and cutting that if we hadn't gone on this journey and about the journey we're about to go on, I don't know how I could forgive her for this. Like, I do understand and I do.
Yeah.
And it's not that Feyre didn't deserve to know is the problem.
Absolutely.
The delivery.
The delivery was it was cruel.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't see how you could argue that. My problem is Nesta's intention behind this. It was not to tell Feyre for her, because like that was the right thing to do.
No.
We can all agree it was the right thing to do that Feyre know this information. No one is trying to argue that. But you cannot argue that Nessa's intention here is to hurt Feyre, to yes. lash out at her, to be cruel to her. And this is her life. This is her baby's life. Yeah. This is not yeah. how you deliver this information. It's disgusting. No. I'm sorry. It's disgusting.
It's awful. Yeah, she's using it to inflict pain.
Yes.
She wants Feyre to hurt the way she's hurting.
Right. Well, and I do think, you know, if, as we've said, Sarah had to map out this whole book, we had to get Nesta to rock bottom.
Absolutely.
We had to get her to the lowest of low to then have everything happen.
Yeah.
And to get there, what happens is Rhysand is absolutely furious and orders Cassian to, quote, get Nesta out of the city right now before I fucking kill her. Something about this, the first read, I was like, oh, wow. Okay, that's aggressive. And this read, I was like, I'm valid. I don't know.
Honestly, yeah. That's so like, valid.
Also, he's not going to actually kill her.
No,
he would needs never. A break.
Okay, so let's talk about Feyre in this moment. So they go on the hike. Believe we'll talk about the hike in detail in a moment. But mm-hmm. they go on the hike, and Feyre mind speaks to Cassian, which, by the way, just a moment of levity here. Cassian's like, oh, I forgot you could mind speak.
Oh, hey, girl. I thought we could do this. We've been doing this the whole time.
Feyre was like, wow, I don't know if I should be offended. Like, maybe I should be using my Daimati skills more. Like, yeah, why aren't we using that more in any helpful political situation?
Seriously.
If you aren't using it enough that Cassian forgets you can do it, maybe we should be using this more.
Okay, yeah, we need to be doing that more.
But fine. Okay, she minds me to Cassian. And pretty much she says, Rhys overreacted sending you away. Like, I'm sorry for my mate's behavior, pretty much.
I don't think so.
And she does say that she's furious at everyone for keeping the secret, but also that she's not really mad at Nesta because she had the courage to tell her. And ultimately, she's very calm about the whole thing.
More calm than I would be.
I know.
Also, keep in mind, not much time has passed. So
no, it's been like a couple days.
Oh, I don't even think it's been a day. They leave for the hike.
It's literally like within hours.
See, I don't.
It's within hours.
It's weird.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Cassian still like apologizes for Nesta, even though Feyre's not mad at her.
She's over it.
And pretty much says like she wishes Feyre hadn't found out the way that she did.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, like we said, she told you the truth to hurt you. Feyre says, perhaps, but she was the only one who said anything. Cassian sighed. I think she saw the parallels between your situations and, in her own way, decided to avenge both of you. That's my feeling too, Feyre said.
I feel like that's Sarah trying to make it more palatable.
Agreed.
It is not.
It's not.
Yeah. Cassian then says, how can you be so calm about this? Valid. Good question. And then Feyre's response is, the alternative is fear and panic. I will not let my son feel those things. I will fight for him, for us, and until I no longer can. Cassian's throat tightened. We'll fight for you too. And she says, I know. I love that we will fight for you too moment.
Yeah, I love that.
It's hard for me, this from Feyre. I love the motherhood being strong for your child. We all feel it. We all know it. I get it. But it feels like just cop-outs for her to be able to get over it. Like, I don't know.
Agreed.
Like, this is the Feyre that went to the cabin for days because she was so
mad
at Rhys. For not telling her. And now within hours, she's like, he overreacted. It's
yeah.
fine. That was hard for me. I get it's not Feyre's book, but I would have loved to see Rhys groveling. Something.
Yeah. I feel like Sarah dialed the confrontation up to a 10. And then now Feyre's response is like a 5. A 4.
Yeah. And we don't even get to see it.
You have to match these. Like, for as terrible as Nesta was, there has to be, not consequences, but like, you're almost taking away the intensity of that situation by having Feyre be so like mild and calm about it and just be like, we're fine. Rhys overreacted.
Yeah. I don't want to say it's out of character for Feyre to forgive Nesta because I don't think it is.
No.
I just expected there to be a little bit more grief.
Grief and like blash and like real life fallout yeah. from this.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is. The grief thing, that's what we didn't get to see because again, it's not her book. So it happened not where Nesta was.
True.
But
yeah.
What I wanted was some acknowledgement. I'm okay with her forgiving Nesta, but I needed her to be really mad and upset with someone.
I think it goes back to what you just said, though, Christina. It's like, it's not her book, so we're not going to get it.
It's not her
but
book.
It's frustrating.
Okay, Anna, let's do the hike.
Buckle up, everybody.
This is The Climb, okay, by Miley Cyrus.
It's The Climb.
It's always gonna be another mountain. I was singing that this morning driving home from drop-off. Like,
love it.
It's The Climb, baby. Let's go. Let's do this.
All right.
Everybody.
All right, listeners. This brings us to one of the most brutal sections of the book. Nesta is basically operating on empty, physically, emotionally, mentally. Cassian puts her through long, grueling days of hiking, carrying a pack. It nearly breaks her. She's barely speaking. He's barely acknowledging her beyond what's necessary. And Nesta doesn't push back. She doesn't complain. She doesn't seem to care. She's just existing. She's going through the motions because stopping would mean thinking, and thinking would mean facing how much she hates herself and all of the things that she just did. What's really important here is that this isn't just physical exhaustion. This is Nesta actively flirting with not wanting to exist anymore. She ignores hunger. She ignores thirst. She doesn't signal for help. And eventually her body completely gives out and she collapses. She faints. And that's the moment Cassian realizes just how far gone she is, and that this isn't stubbornness or defiance. It's apathy, which is worse. And it's indifference towards her own survival. So the stakes aren't about whether or not she can finish the hike and make it to the lake. The stakes are whether or not Nesta actually just wants to keep herself alive. And that realization for Cassian and for the readers is what makes the quotes coming up in the section hit so hard. Yeah. So eventually we get this big inner monologue from Nesta and where she stands, and they are approaching the lake. It was a blessed relief to be nothing and no one. She had been born wrong, had been born with claws and fangs and had never been able to keep from using them, never been able to quell the part of her that roared at betrayal, that could hate and love more violently than anyone ever understood. She didn't know how to fix it, how to make any of it right, how to stop being this way. She didn't remember a time when she hadn't been angry. Maybe before her mother had died, but even then her mother herself had been bitter, disdainful of their father, and her mother's disdain had become her own. She couldn't quell that relentless churning anger, couldn't stop herself from lashing out before she could be wounded. She was no better than a rabid dog. She had been a rabid dog with Amarin and Feyre, a beast exactly like Tamlin. She hadn't even cared that she'd made it down the stairs at last. Did it count when it was driven by fury? Did she count? Was she worth being counted? It was the question that sent everything crumpling inside her. And then she approaches the lake. Nesta didn't see the lake or the stones or the sunlight and green. Her vision blurred and her eyes stung as if they had been sliced, cleaved open to allow tears to pass. She made it to the stones before she fell to her knees, so hard the rock bit into her bones. Was she worth being counted? She knew the answer, had always known it.
Oh, God, Nesta.
It's brutal.
It's so hard. Oh, God. So sad. And also beautifully written at the same time. Like,
yes, so beautifully written.
So well done. Oh.
She writes these monologues for her characters, and it comes from a deep part of her, clearly, where she can just put it out there. And you read that, and the way that she says, was she worth being counted? You know?
Oh, God. And so powerful.
It's so powerful. She compares herself to the cornered animal, to a rabid cornered animal, to a rabid dog.
Exactly. That wolf through line.
Yeah.
Okay. So they reach the lake. And it's clear from the quotes that Anna just read that Nesta is at rock bottom. Now, I naively thought she began the book at rock bottom. But Sarah said, hold my beer. It can get so much worse, you sweet summer child. You don't even know.
You don't even know.
And we didn't know.
We did not know. Nope.
No. So they get to the lake. Nesta is questioning whether or not she wants to be alive. And she finally breaks down on the shore, sobbing and shaking. Cassian wraps his arms around her, comforting her. And Nesta finally vocalizes out loud all the grief and self-hatred she has been holding on to. He came to save me and fought for me, and I let him die with hate in my heart, hate for him. He died because I didn't stop it. Her voice broke and she wept harder. And I was so horrid to him until the very end. I was so, so horrid to him all my life, and still he somehow loved me. I didn't deserve it, but he did. And I let him die. I can't undo it. I can't fix it. I can't fix that he's dead. I can't fix what I said to Feyre. I can't fix any of the horrible things I've done. I can't fix me. I should have found a way to save us before then, save Elaine and Feyre when we were poor, but I was so angry and I wanted him to try to fight for us, but he didn't, and I would have let us all starve to prove what a wretch he was. It consumed me so much that I let Feyre go into that forest and told myself I didn't care, that she was half wild and it didn't matter, and yet she let out a wrenching cry.
I close my eyes and I see her that day she went out to hunt the first time. I see Elaine going into the cauldron. I see her taken by it during the war. I see my father dead. And now I will see Feyre's face when I told her that the baby would kill her. Oh, she says, I hate it. I hate every part of me that does these things. And yet I can't stop it. I can't let down that barrier because to let it fall, to let everything in, this was what would happen. This shrieking, weeping mess she'd become. I can't bear to be in my head. I can't bear to hear and see everything over and over. That is all I hear. The snapping of his neck, his last words to me, that he loved me. And she says, I didn't deserve that love. I deserve nothing.
Oh, God.
I deserve nothing.
Oh, just everything about, like,
yeah.
I let Feyre go into that forest and, like,
yeah.
It's just so.
And what a journey for us, right? Like, we have spent hours of our lives, actually.
Yeah.
Being like, Nesta, how dare you? How could you do that to Feyre? Like, all the things.
Yeah.
And then you get to this part in the book and you don't forgive her, but you just feel it with her. Well, like, you hold it with her and you're just, it's
the
so
first
hard.
Time she's vocalizing everything that we have thought out loud, and she actually feels remorse.
Yes.
She doesn't want, yeah. You hear her say, like, I don't want to be this way. I don't, like, fix me. How can I can't
yeah.
fix myself.
Yeah. I can't fix me.
I can't, why do I keep doing this? And it's so sad, but it's so beautifully written, and it's so cathartic
yes.
for the readers
yes.
to see her say all of these things, because yes, you get inner monologues, but it's different when you vocalize it out loud.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. And I think that's what I needed as the reader, was like, I needed Nesta to say it because
yeah.
she's thinking it, but I'm like, but you're not saying it. Like, then when she does it, you're like, oh, Nesta. Like,
I know.
It just, it's, oh God, it's just, it's so beautiful. And Cassian tells her, what you feel, this guilt and pain and self-loathing, you will get through it, but only if you are willing to fight, only if you are willing to face it and embrace it and walk through it to emerge on the other side of it.
Oh, it's just, this whole section is so beautiful. And I think when we first read this 6 years ago, I was just in such a different place. Like, this hit me so differently. And I wasn't a mom yet.
Yeah.
I hadn't really gone to therapy yet, but I really feel like I related more to her this time around. And I understood more why so much of the fandom is so deeply connected to her in this way that feels like she's talking about you. Like, feels like almost
yeah.
a defensiveness of Nesta in a
yes.
way that you're relating to her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I struggle a lot with negative self-talk and not feeling like I'm enough. And I feel like that's a lot of my people-pleasing personality of I should be like this and should do this and all these other things to be liked. And so having Cassian on page be like, you don't have to be some impossible ideal. There's nothing like to fix.
There's nothing to fix.
I didn't expect to relate to it this much this time.
Yeah.
And it was just really so powerful.
It really was. I definitely feel like when she says, I hate it, every part of me that does these things, and yet I can't stop it. I feel like that too, just even in being a mom, like when I snap at my kids or I yell at my kids, even when it's happening, I'm like, this is not that big of a deal. Like, in my mind, I'm like, stop it. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you reacting this way? Like, it's not that big of a
yeah,
deal. Like, it's okay. And then I get in bed and, like, you know, look at pictures of them and sob. And, like, I started apologizing to them. Like, I just got upset with Evie for breaking something. And later I came back to her and I was like, hey, I'm really sorry for doing that. Like, I should not have yelled at you. Like, that's not fair to do that to you. Like, it was not that big of a deal. Because it's hard when you feel like you can't control yourself sometimes when
yes.
you're just like, you lash out. And even when you're lashing out, your inner monologue is like, stop it. Stop it. Stop doing this. Calm down.
Yes.
I so relate to Nesta in this way, and hearing her talk about, like, I hate this part of myself. I hate that I'm like this.
I know. It's the same thing, Kim, like with the kids and like just feeling like I have so many thoughts in my head moving at once. The mental load of like, do this, do that. You know, I need you to go here, go put your shoes on and stop arguing. Why are you asking me so many questions? Like, I just need you to do this. And then you lose it and you snap and you're human. And then it's like an immediate, I almost want to like scream at myself.
Yes.
Because I'm like, why did I just snap at them? Like, it's not their
yeah.
fault. But the important thing, like you said, is what Nesta does here is going to apologize.
And also
yeah.
then being able to forgive yourself for that, because that's her biggest piece of this journey here, is then understanding that you have to then forgive yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So Cassian, God, guys, he's so beautiful in this part.
Oh, the way he handles Nesta in this scene is so beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, it's so gorgeous. Okay, forgiveness is something we also grant ourselves. And I can talk to you until these mountains crumble around us. But if you don't wish to be forgiven, you don't want to stop feeling this way. If you don't want to stop feeling this way, it won't happen. He kept her cheek. You don't need to become some impossible ideal. You don't need to become sweet and simpering. You can give everyone that I will slay my enemies look, which is my favorite look, by the way. You can keep that sharpness I like so much, that boldness and fearless. I don't want you to ever lose those things, to cage yourself. And she said, but I still don't know how to fix myself. And he says, there's nothing broken to fix. You are helping yourself, healing the parts of you that hurt too much and perhaps hurt others too. Mm, oh, God, it's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
This is such an important moment for them.
Yeah.
It's just so well done here. And I think it really hits, and it is what it is because of the journey it took us to get here. Like, Rhysan could say these exact words until he's blue in the face to Feyre, and it wouldn't hit like this.
Yeah.
Like, it's because of the journey we've been on with Nesta.
Yes.
And so Cassian, knowing that she needs the physical activity and giving her a purpose and giving her, reminding her that she has this power in her and she built it up, he lets her cry, and then he hands her the blade, and he says, show me the eight-pointed star. And it says, each slice was perfect, like that eight-pointed star was stamped on her very heart. The sword was an extension of her arm, a part of her as much as her hair or breath. Every movement bloomed with purpose and precision in the moonlight. Before Silvered Lake, she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. Nesta finished the eighth maneuver and returned the sword to center. The light in her eyes shone brighter than the moon overhead.
I love that.
God, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
You know, we've come so far. We hit rock bottom again.
And then we got a pick and we said, we're going further.
We're going, we're getting up that mountain, goddammit.
But then the journey here feels so earned and beautiful.
It's so earned.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm going to stop crying. Anna, could you do the sign off?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, I can. All right, listeners, that is where we're going to wrap up part four of our Akasoff episode.
Yes.
We will be back next week to discuss Nesta and Cassian's trip to the prison island, the harp, and the winter solstice ball. But, don't leave yet.
Don't leave.
Because it's time for our favorite little corner of the episode, Mastermind.
Yay!
Where we peel back the curtain on all the brilliant foreshadowing, plot threads, Easter eggs that Sarah J. Maas has been planting since page one. A quick spoiler warning from here on out. In addition to ACOTAR, we will be referencing the entire Throne of Glass and Crescent City series. So if you have not finished those yet, cheers and happy reading. We'll see you next time. But if you're all caught up, let's dive in.
Yay! I do also want to give a PSA that Akasoff has a lot to do here, guys. There's a lot of Mastermind Easter eggs. So if something comes up in an episode we're actively speaking about and we don't bring it up in Mastermind, it might be in another episode's Mastermind, but just know that we will get to them all in the Akasoff coverage, we promise.
We also have so many CC3 theories episodes where after we had the crossover acknowledged, guys, we went crazy, PhD level thesis with theories and crossover parallels, everything. So I guarantee you that in the years, over the last 2 years, we have discussed it.
We've discussed it, yes.
Great. All right, Anna, start us off.
Okay, so I have this quick little TOG parallel here that I love. Earlier in one of the episodes, we were talking about Cassian, and it's one of our favorite quotes. And at the end, you know, he says, I love that look upon your face. That the first time I saw it, I would fall to my knees. And then he says, your power is a song and one I've waited a very, very long time to hear, Nesta. And we've talked about how Cassian has never really been afraid of Nesta where others have been. And it just reminds me of Rowan and Aelin when Rowan says, I see you, I see every part of you, and I am not afraid.
Yes.
And I think this sentiment of I see you, I see every part of you, and I'm not afraid is exactly the sentiment that Cassian was portraying at the lake. That is what he was saying to her, was like, you don't have to be this impossible ideal. I see every part of you. I want you to just keep giving people those glares. Like, I'm going to be here and I'm going to love you.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah. That's such a good point, Christina.
Okay. So we would be remiss if we didn't just mention this really fast, but in ACOTAR, the Daglin are the Asteri, right? Okay. And we've talked about this, the Illyrians were the prototypes for the angels in Midgard. That is canon. Are people who built fearsome warriors in that world to be their army, prototypes for the angels in this one, traitors to their creators, joining the Fae to overthrow my brothers and sisters. That is from Crescent City 2. Another just canon, Daglin equals Asteris. is in Akasoff, we have in chapter 55, we learn about the Daglin, that they ruled a millennia ago, enslaved humans and the Fae. They were petty and cruel and drank the magic of the land like wine, which is literally what the Asteri do in Crescent City. When any veneer make the drop, they expel magic, which is then turned into First Light, which is essentially just food for the Asteri. Yep. And Amarin says at the top of Crescent City 3, when Bryce is being held captive, she says, "It is in our history, Rhysand, but the Asteri were not known by that name. Here they were called the Daglin." Canon.
I did love that we got that so quickly in CC 3. She's like, "Nope, Asteri, Daglin, Daglin, Asteri. Potato, potato.
Potato, potato,
potato."
Oh, man.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, God. I'm taking you back to the Bogavorn, everybody. Get back on the bus. Okay.
Oh, God damn
Thank
it.
God. I've missed it so much.
All right. So actually in Hofest, I forgot all about this. We learn that King Fionn died at the Bog of Orid because the bog was like this private hunting park for the Daglin and their beasts and stuff. And the Kelpie pulled Fionn under the water and Theia and Peleus just stood there. There he goes.
Yep. Oh, dear. Well.
And they came back with the swords because Theia then summoned Gwydion and Truth Teller. They rose out of the water and went to her because of her starborn power, but also the fact that she was there when they were both dipped into the cauldron.
Yeah.
So, fun fact, all that happened at the Bog of Orid.
Yes. Okay. So, let's chat about the Pegasus.
Oh, yes.
Which now we know exists in both Crescent City and the ACOTAR world. Okay, so this is from when Helion flies in to visit Prithian. According to legend, the Pegasi had come from the island the prison sat upon, had once fed in fair meadows that had long given way to moss and mist. Perhaps that was part of the decline. Their homeland had vanished, and whatever had sustained them there was no longer. Lore held that there had once been far more of them before recorded history, and that most of them had just vanished, as if they'd been devoured by the sky itself. Mm. Their population had dwindled further in the last 1,000 years for reasons no one could explain.
Interessant. Okay.
Interesting. We also know from Selene's hologram info dump in CC3 that the Pegasi were driven into the battle on Midgard. And then when Bryce and the crew are in the Prince of Caves, there are carvings depicting the Pegasi being slaughtered. So it says, "Fae in elaborate armor have been carved into the walls, many holding what seemed to be ropes that have been looped around the necks of flying horses. They pull them towards the ground. Some sank into the sea." And Bryce says, "A hunt. So the early Fae did kill all of Thea's Pegasus then." And then she also says the Pegasi and the tunnels carvings hadn't been religious iconography then, and they lived long enough in Midgard to grace early art, like the frieze at the Crescent City Ballet. They must have all died out, becoming nothing more than myth and a line of sparkly toys.
Jelly Jubilee!
Jelly Jubilee! Jubilee!
Oh, wow.
So fun. Although, a fun, happy ending here is that we know at the end of CC3, after the Asteri were defeated, 24 Pegasi appeared in Avalon. Yay! After Bryce Moana the land. And it's like they sprang out of the earth.
I love it so much.
And Bryce even wonders if Helena somehow kept them secretly alive, waiting until it was finally safe for them to appear again. Mm. And guys, we have a really fun fan fiction FOF canon bonus chapter with Baxian. It's incredible. If you have read CC3, please go to our Patreon and find this FOF canon bonus chapter. We write a little fun deleted scene with Baxian battling the Pegasi on Avalon. And it's a freaking treat, is
trying
what it
to
is.
Keep them in line, yeah. You know?
Bramble, Blueberry Bramble is acting up again.
Yes. I went and reread the end of CC3 when he calls Bryce and Hunt and they're like about to have sex on the desk. And he's like, "I need you to get here. It's DEFCON 5.
The Pegasi. They're not listening to me."
Oh, it's God. So funny.
All right.
But speaking of Helion.
Yes.
Yes. So Helion, when he sees a Dread Trove for the first time, he references an ancestor who wielded the mask and refuses to house the Dread Troves in his court. This is the quote. "Perhaps an ancestor of mine once used it in warning of its cost is imprinted upon my blood." And then he recoils from the trove items themselves.
His reaction is not normal to other people's reaction.
It's not normal.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in one of our earlier CC3 episodes. And I stand by this, especially after reading this quote from this book. It feels like Helion might have been related to Helena. And also the names Helion, Helena, it feels like Charlotte, Charles, you know, like they're all like derived from the same
name.
And Pegasus, if they did originally hail from the Death Court, aka the prison island, and then went through to Midgard with Helena, it makes sense that Helena would keep them on a magical mist island that resembles at least something that they had in Prithian, right? It's shrouded in mist.
Right.
Helion is the only person who owns surviving Pegasi in this world. Again, it makes sense if it's in his blood, If something like Helena was able to somehow control or help rear the Pegasi, it would make sense then if it was somehow passed down. We know that Rhysand comes from the Thea's daughter Selene's line, and Bryce is a part of Queen Thea's line. Who's to say that somewhere along the way, Helion, also the Day Court, the Shining, the Star.
So that would mean, if we're saying this, that would mean that Helion, i.e. Lucien, are Starborn Fae. They have Starborn powers.
Yes. But so does Rhysand. But it's noted that, like it could be latent. Like it's not as pure blooded through.
Sure.
But Helion's Day Court, like what of that glowing, what if it could also be Starborn power?
Ooh, could Lucien help bring back the Dusk Court if that's the case? Lucien and Elaine. I love that.
What a power couple.
I still think Elaine's going to spring, but I love this idea of Lucien being involved.
Yes.
All right.
That's so fun, though. Okay. Yeah. Also, Gwydion.
Yeah.
We obviously know that Gwydion is the Star Sword. They are one and the same. And the real story is that after going through the gates into Midgard, Peleus took Gwydion, even though it's only meant for female heirs. But he then, we're assuming, named it Star Sword. And then it was buried with him in the Cave of Princes. And Rune then later retrieved it from the Cave of Princes. And then, as we know, later gave it to Bryce.
Yes.
So that is the actual history of Gwydion.
Yeah.
Also, something that happens after the Bog of Urid is there's two Autumn Court soldiers who are kept alive. And Asriel brings them to his torture dungeon chambers that are in the bottom of the Hewn City. And this is the description. There was a place in the Court of Nightmares where even Kyr and his elite squadron of Darkbringers did not dare tread. Once the Night Court's enemies entered that place, they did not come out. Not alive, anyway. Most of what remained of their bodies didn't leave either. Those went through the hatch in the center of the circular room and into the pit of writhing beasts below, to their scales and claws and merciless hunger. The beasts did not feed often. They could receive a body every 10 years and make it last, going into hibernation between meals. So it continues on, and then it says, their snarls and hisses, their snapping tails and scraping claws could have incentivized the males chained to the chairs to talk. So I read it this time and I was like, wait a second, this sounds so familiar to me. It's got to be where Bryce was being held captive. Obviously, she's held captive somewhere in a torture chamber in the beginning of Hofas in the Hewn City. But it's glaringly obvious that I think her room is technically not a circle, but I also think that there's probably, I mean, who wouldn't have multiple torture chambers? I mean.
Right. Well, I mean, they've got to be cleaned and turned over. Like, there probably is blood.
Maid service.
Yes. I mean, you might have multiple. You need to separate sometimes the prisoners and interrogate them separately.
Sure, of course.
You know?
But this is, it's really fun that they're so similar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it says that she was, you know, thrown into a room and that there was a grate in the center of the floor a few feet away, a grate from which she could have sworn a hissing sound emanated.
I love that.
I cannot tell you how many times the word hissing is used in the first, like, few chapters with Bryce.
Oh, like 17 it's or insane. 20 times.
Yes. Bryce couldn't stop herself from coolly surveying the room, her attention lingering on the grate and the hissing that drifted from it. And then again, like two more times in that same section, when she eventually does go through the grate and drops, she saw a writhing sea of black scaled bodies. She compares them to Sobex in her world. And then she also says there's hissing mouths and slashing tails, which is exactly how they're described in Akasov.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. All right, listeners, that wraps up our mastermind section.
Yay.
Yes. We are so excited. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.